Welcome to the Weekly Fix, Asia Society's podcast featuring the latest out of Asia, an analysis you can only get here. I'm Alex Farbstein. It's Tuesday, September 30th. You don't have to just be in New York to feel the impact of Wall Street's meltdown. Asian indices have been reeling as the U.S. Congress debates a bailout package. I'm here with Hedda Barron, who reported extensively during the 97 Asian financial crisis. She recently wrote an article that appeared in the South China Morning Post about how the Asian financial crisis looks awfully similar to what's been happening on Wall Street today. So, Hedda, just to start us off, what caused the Asian financial crisis?
The Asian financial crisis was caused primarily by weak regulatory system in Asia and also by bad lending practices, which is precisely what we're seeing now here in the U.S. Now, at that time, back before 1997, Asia was in a boom. And you might have heard of the term Asian tigers. And these were the emerging economies of South Korea, Indonesia, and some other Southeast Asian countries. And at that time, you know, companies were really bullish and they started borrowing a lot of money to finance real estate, you know, buildings and other, you know, buying machineries and expanding factories in Asia. A lot of them borrowed in U.S. dollars. So when an external shock, such as a fall of the Asian currencies, which happened in the summer of 1997. When the Asian currencies fell, these corporates were having a hard time paying their U.S. dollar debt. So then that's when we started to see defaults on loans. And that then replicated throughout the system. For example, Indonesia, it basically wiped out the Indonesian banking industry because a lot of the corporations defaulted on their loans and so the banks went bankrupt.
So instead of having a currency meltdown, we've had a mortgage meltdown. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Instead of an external shock, you had an internal shock, which is a subprime mortgage crisis.
And the way that Asia got out of the crisis was through lending by the U.S. and the IMF. Do you think we might see some of the countries that were bailed out come and return the favor?
Well, certainly Asian countries now have a lot of money. They have trillions of dollars in reserves. And I think what they're trying to do is just trying to monitor the situation closely, watching what steps the U.S. government is going to take. And of course, the corporates are, some of them have already invested in U.S. Financial institutions, Mitsubishi UFJ, Nomura, and before that, some sovereign wealth funds have also invested in Citibank and Morgan Stanley. So I think we are going to see a lot more of these activities, but it's not going to come that quickly. They're very cautious at this point.
Well, and the great irony is that these countries have so much money because they followed U.S. and IMF advice. Do you think they're having a little bit of a chuckle now, given that?
I think Asian countries see the irony of what's going on. But at the same time, they are very realistic and they understand the severity of the situation. And I don't think that anyone out there is going to say something like, hey, look at the U.S. and see that the tables are turning. I think they are, and at the same time, they also want to make sure that they have enough reserves back home to withstand any effects of this crisis.
And finally, what do you think the impact of the U.S. financial crisis will be on Asia?
For Asia, let's remember that America, the United States, is Asia's biggest trading partner. So if the U.S. economy goes into a recession, you can imagine that Asia will be selling less and less of what it used to export. So that would then impact economic growth. The GDP numbers are going to go down. And I think we're going to see that in the next few quarters. Another point is that financial institutions with exposure to U.S. subprime mortgages will be affected. And this is worrying because it could create a crisis of confidence in the financial systems in Asia, which, as we have seen in Hong Kong, there was a bank run at the Bank of East Asia. And the Hong Kong government has since come out and injected liquidity in Hong Kong. But, you know, this kind of activities, whether it's just rumors or whether they are true, could then be, as before, as in 1997, could then be replicated throughout the system. And that, even though the fundamentals of Asian economies are strong, a crisis of confidence would be devastating.
It's time now for our section, Heard at Asia Society. President Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan spoke here last week with our trustee, Tom Freston. In this excerpt, President Karzai gives advice to the next president of the United States on how best to aid Afghanistan, talks about his meeting with Sarah Palin, and about the recent spate of civilian casualties.
What are the most important changes in U.S. policy that you want the next U.S. president to take to promote change in Afghanistan, or peace in Afghanistan?
Pay a lot of attention to what we have now begun to call as Afghanization. Strengthen the Afghan security forces, add to the strength of the Afghan army, give us as soon as possible mobility, meaning ground transportation and air mobility, give us all the planes that we have, and money and support to the Afghan bureaucracy, train our people, give us capacity. In other words, enable us to defend ourselves and to fight the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. What is your opinion, Your Excellency, on today's meetings with the UN and its effects on Afghanistan?
Well, I've had a number of meetings today with Governor Palin, with Secretary Rice. Very good.
Hey, you're probably the only person in the room who's met Governor Palin. What do you think?
Very good. I found her quite a capable woman. She asked the right questions on Afghanistan. She was concerned, and she said how she can help. So I'm very pleased with that meeting.
Another thing that's been in the news, obviously, lately is the sharp increase of civilian casualties in Afghanistan, coupled with the increase of Taliban activity. So, to get a sense from you, do you think that the international campaign on behalf of Afghanistan, is it all faltering there in terms of public opinion or other measurements? And if it is, what would the solution be in your mind, and how could it be rectified domestically and or regionally?
It is not faltering. The Afghan people know very, very well and deeply within their hearts that Afghanistan would have been an extremely poor, miserable country without the help of the United States and the rest of allies. That Afghanistan would have been an occupied country without the arrival of the rest of the world. That we are liberated, that we have now a future to look forward to. That yes, this future is under attack, this hope is under attack. And while we are fighting the menace of terrorism and extremism, we make mistakes. We have made mistakes together, the United States, NATO, and us, we have made mistakes. And those mistakes have at times cost us dearly in terms of life. As much as we get angry in Afghanistan, I get personally angry from time to time on these bombing raids into our villages, and I've raised my voice. But that is a voice raised with a friend for correction. Not otherwise. Mm-hmm. The Afghan people would ask for a change in the way we do things, but they would very much want to continue this journey with the United States into a better future for Afghanistan and a world free from the scourge of terrorism. So you have us with you into the future in spite of the cost that we may have to pay.
Let's turn now to my colleague, Ashley Eiler, with what's going on at Asia Society around the world. Ashley?
Well, on Thursday at our Northern California office, San Francisco, we have a really exciting program. Robert Thurman, is going to be talking about why the Dalai Lama matters. And this is going to take place at the KQED auditorium. That's the radio station there. And the event actually starts at 6, but you guys should get there at 5 because they are doing free docent tours of the KQED facility, which should be fun. But back to Robert Thurman. He is, you know, clearly a renowned Tibetan scholar, and he's a very close, longtime friend of the Dalai Lama. And what he's going to present on this evening is a bold 5-point plan that is for establishing Tibet's genuine autonomy within China. So it's not taking Tibet out of China fully, but it's getting it full autonomy. So he's the guy to hear that kind of plan from. So that should be really interesting. That's Thursday, October 2nd in San Francisco. And on Tuesday, October 7th, we have an event in Beverly Hills, California. Very posh. It's a film. It's part of the Asian film series, and it's a film called Fish Fall in Love. It's about this woman who is totally obsessed and in love with food. We're all foodies, aren't we? And she has a small restaurant in a sleepy Caspian coast. And the idea is she has this great restaurant, and then her fiance, former fiance, after disappearing for 20 years, comes back, and she thinks he wants to close the restaurant. So she spends, a good chunk of time preparing his favorite dishes and just keeps feeding them and feeding them to him. It kind of has a sort of an epic sound to it because it's actually based loosely on Persian fable of the Shahrazad and the Thousand Myths. So it should be quite exciting. It's actually going to be, if you miss it in Beverly Hills on October 7th, you can actually catch it in New York. It's going to be playing at the Asia Society here on December 2nd. So wherever you are, you can see this film.
Great. Thanks so much. As always, check out asiasociety.org for more special features, news, and commentary. I'm Alex Farbstein. Join us again next Tuesday for the Weekly Fix.